But we return now to the hotline as we find out what's going on this weekend in the NFL slate, the college football slate, and beyond as we bring in Adam Burke with BangTheBook.com and Bang the Book Radio. Adam, how are you today?
Doing well, Andy. How about you?
So far, so good. I mean, look, it's November, so it's going to be a little gray, going to be a little gloomy out there, but we're certainly okay with that, and I don't think anybody in the college football scene would have it any other way either. Lots of great college action this weekend. The college football situational betting slate, though, pretty hot here in Week 12. There are a couple of really intriguing matchups. I want to focus on a couple in particular, Cincinnati against Central Florida and, of course, West Virginia against Oklahoma State in the Big 12.
Yeah, Cincinnati and Central Florida is a really big game for a lot of different reasons. I mean, if we get a whole lot of crazy things that happen over the next 3 weeks, maybe Central Florida with a second straight undefeated season can find its way into the college football playoff. I doubt that's the case, but if you talk about a team that hasn't lost in 2 years, at some point you have to give them their due. Biggest test of the year for them here this weekend against Cincinnati. College game days down in Orlando. You know, I mean, right now you've got Central Florida a 7-point favorite out there. I think that's a pretty accurate number. I kind of like where that number is sitting right now. For Cincinnati, you know, in my article, I kind of likened it to a horse that runs a lot of grade two stakes races and then steps up to a grade one, has that potential, has that opportunity. I just don't know if the Bearcats are on that level as of yet, but we're going to find out on Saturday.
Yeah, we certainly are, and this is a really intriguing matchup. And you wonder, I mean, if Central Florida wins, I mean, I don't know how much that does to drive their stock past some of the other teams that are likely going to get into that Final Four discussion. But really and truly, if they go undefeated 2 years in a row and they still don't crack the top four, to me, that tells me there are a few too many problems with this process.
Yeah, I mean, the obvious thing to do here is maybe make it a 6-team playoff or an 8-team playoff. If you make it 6, you give Alabama and Clemson a bye. You let 3 play 6, 4 play 5, or you even put 8 teams in it. I think that's something that they should ultimately do. I don't know if they're going to, but one of the things that's going to hurt Central Florida here, and it's really out of their control, there's nothing they can do about it. They don't have a team in the AAC West Division that's any good. You know, they don't really have anybody in the conference championship game to give them a game and improve their resume. So it's a tough spot for them to be in.
Yeah, it's a very tough spot for them to be in. There's no doubt about that. I just think that, look, as a Division I program, if you go undefeated, there should be something more than a bowl game for you to play in. Because if you run the gauntlet, you win every single game you're supposed to play, but the end result is, at the very, very best, a BCS game at the end of the day. I'm not really sure that's enough to justify just how great those kids have played throughout the course of the year. But that's a discussion we can have on a different day. Another big matchup this weekend in the Big 12, the West Virginia Mountaineers taking on Oklahoma State. This should be a really good one as well.
Yeah, it should. I mean, this is a really intriguing spot. Really, the Big 12 is very intriguing over the next 2 weeks, because if West Virginia wins this game, they play Oklahoma next week. Both teams would be 7-1 in conference play, because Oklahoma plays Kansas this week, and they're a 5-touchdown favorite in that game. So for West Virginia here, a lot to lose. If they lose this game, it's very hard for them to get into that Big 12 championship game, unless, of course, Texas beats Iowa State. So lots of things going on in the Big 12 here over the next 2 weeks. But you know, this spot in particular is really fascinating for both teams. West Virginia went on the road to Iowa State, toughest road game they've played this year. They lost, and not only did they lose that game, they pretty much got dominated in that game. Now they're on the road in Stillwater. Oklahoma State's not as good of a team as Iowa State. Oklahoma State, also off of losing the Bedlam game last week to Oklahoma, went for 2 at the end, didn't get it. You kind of wonder here for the Cowboys how invested they are, but also, and there are a lot of buts and ifs and things like that here in college football the next 2 weeks, Oklahoma State still needs a win to get 6 wins and get to a bowl game. So there are so many considerations here this week and next week in college football, so many more than usual. It's not just about the lines and the matchups and things like that. You have to look at division opportunities, conference opportunities, and then, of course, getting that magic number of 6 for a bowl game.
And, of course, next weekend, a really big one, a rivalry week. And as we get closer and closer to these conference championship games, these discussions will certainly heat up. Want to take a look at the NFL side of things now, and we'll get into the fantasy side, DraftKings, FanDuel, NFL, DFS starting lineup tips. Boy, I noticed this week that you kind of loaded up on the Cardinals as they take on the Oakland, or the, I guess they were the Oakland, now they are the L.A. Raiders, whatever it is they're called these days. But I noticed that you loaded up on these guys playing against the Raiders this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at the Oakland Raiders, they're kind of lying face down here, and if you poke them with a stick, they're not going to move. I mean, this is, and we saw this a few weeks ago, too, when they played the 49ers, a game where they had, you know, significant investment in kind of tanking because they want as high of a draft pick as they can possibly get. This game kind of falls into the same category for them. You've got infighting between John Gruden and Derek Carr. You've got a team that's wondering what the direction of this franchise actually is. Everybody kind of knows that it's all about the relocation to Las Vegas now. So I don't really think the Raiders show up at all here this week. They're already one of the worst defensive teams that we've seen in a very long time. I saw today that their pressure rate of quarterbacks is the lowest we've seen since 2013. I think that only gets worse. And for the Cardinals here, you know, since they made the offensive coordinator change to Byron Leftwich, a guy that certainly has carved out a good career for himself in college and also in the NFL, the Cardinals have been a much more efficient offensive team. They're giving the ball to David Johnson, which makes sense. They're using Larry Fitzgerald more. I don't know why it's so hard for these coaches to figure out that you're supposed to give the ball to your best players, but now that the Cardinals have figured it out, maybe this is a good week for Josh Rosen to get a little bit of confidence going.
Adam, speaking of those California teams, that Monday night game that was supposed to be played down in Mexico City, now going to be in Los Angeles. Rams will host the Kansas City Chiefs. How does that change the look at that game if you're looking at that one?
I think it, I mean, in terms of points and in terms of fantasy production, it should help. Now, of course, we'll see if this game winds up getting played. I know Stanford and Cal probably going to be canceled on the college football side. We've had some college basketball games canceled as well. Hopefully the wildfires are contained enough, or at least far enough away from the area, for this game to be played. But, you know, I know that there were some very smart people that I respect. Despite how good these two offenses are, the Chiefs and the Rams, they were looking to play the under in Mexico City because you've got altitude considerations. Yeah. It's different throwing the football. You know, guys will have different fatigue levels, things like that. I think now that it's in California, assuming this game is played under okay conditions out there, I think it helps both of these offenses. I think we should see a lot of points in that game Monday night.
Well, sticking with the NFL, have you seen any interesting shifts in betting lines since the NFL's opening line report was revealed at the beginning of the week?
One of them, obviously, Arizona going up from a 3-point favorite to a 5.5-point favorite. You don't really think of the Cardinals as a team that you want to lay big numbers with, but that just kind of speaks to what we were just previously talking about with regards to the Oakland Raiders and just how much of a mess that they are right now. The Pittsburgh and Jacksonville line is really intriguing to me. We saw some sharp money hit the board on Jacksonville last week against Indianapolis. It was the wrong side in the first half. If you got +3, you wound up pushing the game. But there are still a lot of segments of the sharp betting market out there that believe in the Jacksonville Jaguars, that believe in that defense, that believe that now that Leonard Fournette is back, that team can turn things around. That may be a line that does come down a little bit more on Sunday, I would think. Another game that kind of stands out, Houston and Washington. Washington, despite leading the NFC East, is a team that a lot of influential bettors are lining up to fade. They don't have a great statistical profile. They're very, very banged up on the offensive line, which could be a problem here against J.J. Watt and Jadeveon Clowney. So Houston's been a very popular team from a sharp standpoint in the betting market. Not a surprise necessarily, but anytime you see a team that a lot of people believe is fraudulent getting a lot of respect as a road favorite, it does raise your eyebrows in the NFL.
Yeah, boy, hard to believe we're already in the 11th week of the season, but it's still such a tough league to figure out. Well, getting to the ice here, talking about Matt Douglas's wheelhouse as we get into the NHL. Any interesting hockey tidbits coming up over the next week and a half, taking us into the Thanksgiving weekend?
Yeah, I know we're not doing the show next week, so I did want to mention this, and this is kind of fascinating. I also, along with the college football situational article, do the same thing for the NHL and the NBA every week over at bangthebook.com, basically looking at scheduling spots trying to find areas where, you know, we can find some value based on teams playing back-to-backs, 3-4s, altitude games, stuff like that. So in the NHL next week, there's one game on Tuesday, and then there are 14 games on Wednesday, no games on Thursday with the Thanksgiving holiday, 15 games on Friday, and I think it's 13 or 14 on Saturday. So next week, 18 teams will play 3 games in 4 days from Wednesday to Saturday, and 21 teams will play in a back-to-back Friday-Saturday. So could be a lot of opportunities out there in the NHL betting market for people paying attention to the schedule.
Very good stuff. Well, I'll tell you what, Matt Douglas might be all over that because there's a lot of games for him to watch when he's at his holiday parties, whether it's up here or down in Columbus, wherever he ends up.
But Columbus is one of those teams with the back-to-back on Friday-Saturday.
Yeah, very good. Well, let's pay attention to some baseball stuff here as well. I know you had tweeted something out a couple of days ago shortly after the Indians completed that 5-player trade with the Pittsburgh Pirates, and just kind of wanted to get your thoughts from an analytical perspective on the outfielder the Indians landed in that trade in Jordan Luplo, a 25-year-old who, of course, was a third-round pick back in 2014, only has a little bit of big league experience, but what was your thought on the acquisition of Jordan Luplo?
I mean, I think it's an interesting grab for the Indians. You know, Eric Gonzalez was a guy that was on the roster pretty much all year and barely wound up getting any playing time. So they traded a spare part here for a guy in Jordan Luplo who was at one time was a pretty highly thought of prospect. He's hit at basically every level in the minor leagues, hasn't hit in his 190 plate appearances at the major league level, largely because of sporadic playing time and a couple of injuries here and there and stuff like that. But a couple of things that really intrigue me about him, he's got a very high pull percentage, and he has a very high pull percentage with a high fly ball percentage. So what the Indians are hoping for here is that they've got a corner outfielder who grades pretty well defensively, had decent numbers against lefties in the minors, and also hits a lot of pull side fly balls. When you hit pull side fly balls, you generally hit for power. He's been thought of as a guy that has a pretty decent power tool. So I think that's the kind of gamble that the Indians need to take here with their outfield. Money is apparently very tight for this team. So anything that they can get that could provide a little bit of surplus value in the outfield, I think a guy like Luplo that can play against lefties on the short side of the platoon, but hit for some power, walk a little bit, and play a good outfield, kind of an upgrade to Brandon Guyer potentially with all the injuries that Guyer's had over the last few years. So I think it's a good grab for the Indians. And again, I mean, this is getting back to what they do best, trying to find guys that are maybe a little bit flawed, maybe need a change of scenery, but can come at the league minimum and be average or better major leaguers. Hopefully Luplo is one of those guys.
Yeah, Luplo, not that long ago, 2017, he was Pittsburgh's minor league player of the year as well, so there's certainly some promise. And we'll cut you loose on this. We didn't get a chance to break this down when we had you on the show last week. But, you know, about 10 days ago, the reports came out about the Indians maybe dangling one of their starting pitchers in trade talks to see if there was any kind of traction, if maybe there was a package that was enticing enough for the Indians to get, you know, a little bit of everything. I think they're certainly looking for the future, looking for a prospect, maybe looking for a corner outfield batter, maybe a third baseman in return, and maybe some bullpen help as well. You threw some names out there on Twitter about 10 days ago talking about a return package from the Yankees that might actually entice the Tribe a bit to part ways with the likes of either or a Corey Kluber or a Carlos Carrasco. You still think that the Yankees are perhaps the best possible suitor at this point because they've got that best combination of things that the Indians are still looking for?
I think the Yankees make a lot of sense. I mean, you've got a GM in Brian Cashman who's kind of come out and said, look, you know, we don't want to spend too much money on this thing. We kind of want to try to stay under the luxury tax or as close to it as we can. So in order to acquire a top-line starting pitcher, you have to go the trade market route. And maybe Corey Kluber is that guy. The Yankees do match up really well. They've got a lot of bullpen arms the Indians could tap into. They've got some young position player depth. They've got a really talented plus-plus defensive outfielder type guy in Estevan Florial. That would be a guy that would fit very, very well for the Indians. The more I'm thinking about it, though, well, I think the Yankees make some sense. I've kind of come around over the last week or so to St. Louis matching up really well with the Indians, and a guy like Harrison Bader, who's an outfielder that grades out really well defensively. He's a fast guy, decent power, hits really well against lefties, and you know they are a very left-handed heavy outfield still. Kluber's the guy that probably needs to go. I think he's the guy that gets you the biggest return because of how established he is and because his contract is very friendly over the next three seasons. And I'm happy to move on from him. He's been great, obviously. Two-time Cy Young Award winner, Cy Young finalist again this year. But the velocity's down a little bit. The command may be waning a little bit. Maybe his pitch usage suggests some underlying injury concerns. Probably about the time to get rid of him. And you know, it's one of those things for the Indians where because finances are always so tight, you want to be more proactive with guys like a Corey Kluber than reactive. And then you get to a point where you're paying him to be an average type of starting pitcher maybe 2 years down the line. You want to capitalize on that asset now because you've developed starting pitching organizationally. You have not developed position players. And if Corey Kluber gets you a couple of 26 and under really good position player guys you can slot in your lineup right now, you have to do it. So I'm really hoping that is something they do here this offseason.
I think we'll learn a lot more in a few weeks when they get going at the winter meetings in Las Vegas. That should be a lot of fun because I think a lot of these discussions will certainly heat up again. Adam, as always, my friend, we appreciate the time very much. Thank you so much for coming on. And as you mentioned earlier in the interview, we won't be on next week because of the Thanksgiving holiday. So we wish you and yours a very happy Thanksgiving as well.
Happy Thanksgiving to you and yours as well, Andy.
Thank you very much, Adam. Again, Adam Burke with BangTheBook.com and Bang the Book Radio.